Good evening, everybody. I'd like to welcome to the City Council meeting Monday, July 22nd, 2015 at 7 p.m. First line of business will be roll call. We've made some changes that to meet the standards of TML. The city administrator will be initiating roll call. You'll just, yeah or nay, you're here. David?
David Jennings?
Yay.
Jerome McCowan?
Here.
Nancy Schnell?
Present.
Aaron Moses?
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Adams?
Here.
Michael Wheeler?
Here.
Thank you, Mr. Stahl. Moving on to 2.0, Pledge Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic which stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I honor the Texas flag. I pledge allegiance to the Texas, one state under God, one and indivisible.
Item 3.0, special presentations. There's no presentations at this time, but what we'd like to do, unfortunately, I have the sad news that everybody pretty much already knows to announce that Alderman Mosier from the court passed away of work-related injury, I believe it was Friday. So I would like to take a moment, along with Alderman Mosier, Leona Mitchell, which was a long-time resident of Shore Acres, had passed. I'd like to take a moment of silence for those two folks, real quick. Thank you very much. Our condolences to the Mosier family and to the city of LaPorte. They lost an extremely good man. Our thoughts and prayers are with them. Moving on to item 3.1, there are no special presentations. We're going to move to 4.0, approval of minutes. 4.1, special council meeting June 8, 2015. If the council has had time to review that, I'll entertain a motion.
I make a motion.
Thank you, ma'am. We have a second.
Second.
Thank you, Mr. Miller. Any questions from the council, special council meeting 2015? If none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Against? Thank you. Moving on to item 4.2, record council meeting June 8, 2015. The council's had time to review that. I'll entertain a motion.
Motion.
Thank you, Mr. Adams. I have a second.
Second.
Mr. Adams. Any questions from council on that? None being. All those in favor?
Aye.
Against? We're on item 5.0, council reports and requests. 5.1, Mayor Moses. 5.11, Tropical Storm Bill. Just touching base, my apologies. I was out of town on vacation at the time when Bill hit. However, I was in contact with the chief, but mainly Mr. Stahl, most of the time trying to find out what was going on in the city. It looks like we were very fortunate to not get it as bad as it was projected to be. I think that we had quite a few plans in order. Barricades were put up in time, some were put up early. We always improve from every time there's an incident. We look at it, where can we improve from? So we have some different ideas on some things that we want to improve on, so the next go around, and it'll happen eventually. Hopefully we'll be better prepared, but all in all, the city did rather well through it. We didn't have any major catastrophes by any means. Moving on to item 5.12, discussion with TxDOT and the sound wall 146. I spoke with Lucille Ortiz when I was in Jamaica a couple of times on the phone, and then when I got back just the other day, the state has approved the aggregate, what everybody had picked with a bunch of rocks on one side for the sound wall. It has been picked and approved. They are working on a panel now to basically bring over to their TxDOT office for us to just take a look at it to see what it is. So the wheels are greased, the movement, and I think they finally moved a little faster now. So if we actually see that this week, well, then they're living up to what they said. We just need to move forward. Also on the wall, there's a section where there is a lake on the 3500 block area, the little pond area there, that there's going to be a section with about six of the wall panels that is going to be cut longer on the bottom vents. As you see, the vents are basically cut at about 2.5-3 feet long by about 4 or 5 inches wide for the water to run. Those panels are going to be cut longer, by 2 feet longer, and at least a foot wide. So that way, that pond overruns, it has even more access to the discharge. So they are working on that also at this time. So that is moving forward on that. To let you know about that one, the information on the light and on northbound 146 feeder, they're still working on that. There's nothing to report on that. I'm still waiting. The two things most I really wanted to know about. However, we hope to get somewhere down the road with that. With that being said, I'm going to move on to item 6.0, public hearings and public comments. Tonight, 6.1 North Rail speed limit on Shoreacres Boulevard, west of 146. We have a citizen that would like to speak about the speed limit on 146. I don't know where you're at, ma'am. Is she here this evening? Doris, you see her, David?
No.
All right. Well, then we're going to move on to item 6.2, public comments. This is the opportunity for the public to address the council or comment on items which appear on the agenda. Time is limited to 5 minutes per speaker. Comments are to be directed to the city council and dialogue with the audience is not permitted. Council members are prohibited by law participating in discussion, deliberation, the items specifically identified on this agenda. Meaning, I know that you would like us to comment sometimes, but we cannot. We can't say what you will, as long as there's nothing, no profanity or anything out of context. Please keep it within guidelines. With that being said, I generally start at the right side. It makes it a little bit easier, so I'll start over here. Just state your name and your address, ma'am.
Thank you, Rondo, 3416 Sunrise Drive. I complained, many moons ago about the lot next to me, how it's overgrown, and I have unwanted neighbors as far as like snakes, raccoons, possums. I think there's like a cat family living in there. I love animals, but they've got to go. I'm wondering like if I could get you guys to like kind of mow the side easement, maybe like 5 feet or so off of my property line into their neighbor or into that lot. I've tried contacting that landowner to buy the lot, you know, within tax foreclosure or, you know, they have to pay their taxes or whatever. So I'm pretty much, you know, stuck next to this overgrown mass of grass and trees and jungle. So if y'all could just help me a little bit or, you know, figure out what we can do to, and I know I'm not the only one that's got, you know, a huge lot next to the item that has like overgrown everything. So I know the guy that lives at Agnell for me, I don't know the street names. He drives a big red truck. He's got a lot beside him too that's overgrown. You know, I'm not sure if everybody would be willing to pay like a maintenance fee, you know, kind of like how we have for the park, you know, just maybe $5 a month and just have our guys or the city's mower guys just go out and kind of, you know, trim out the yard so it's not so horrible. Kind of appreciate that. But that's my only comment or concern or complaint or whatever for now. Thank you.
What was your address again? I'm sorry.
3416 Sunrise Drive, the corner of Shoreacres and Sunrise.
Thank you, ma'am.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Moyer.
I'm Neil Moyer, North Country Club Drive. Council member has provided really quite a buffet of items tonight, and I don't know where to take my first bite. I'm sorry that Doris wasn't here, but if she was interested in lowering the speed limit on that part of Shoreacres Boulevard, one point her issue would be that I believe the speed limit were lowered to 35. Golf carts would be allowed on that street. They are currently not allowed because of the speed limit. That would introduce a new mixed traffic situation that one might be aware of. But I don't know what her answer specifically was. Okay, I also like to point out that at least for those of us on the west side of the city, our heavy trash is still out there. And apparently there are people who like taking pictures of that. You know, I'm sure it's very picturesque, but okay, more power to you. Moving right along to the meat of the buffet. Let me address the issue, the discussion item on keeping wild indoor exotic animals. I understand the issue may be at least one individual when they're walking their dog, the nearby poultry set off the dog into a barking fit. There's several ways to deal with that. Needless to say, whoever has the poultry could put those muzzles on the beaks, and maybe that would take care of their clucking. Alternatively, since there's only one dog involved, maybe one muzzle would work. And, of course, there's obviously the obvious solution is just don't walk your dog in that area if the dog is put off by poultry. Maybe I'm missing the point, but that's where I hear the issue is. Moving along to item 8.7 on the what are representative standards of the Government Finance Officers Association. It's my understanding that these are, in fact, not standards, but, in fact, may represent guidance from this voluntary organization. I think some consideration should be given by the council members that they, let's say, voluntarily try to follow this guidance in the next budget session. It would be an interesting way to try them and fly them before you get further down the road. I'd also be interested in knowing whether any communities the size of Shore Acres, in fact, conduct their budgetary activities in accordance with this guidance. I'd be interested in knowing what the costs are and arguably what benefits come to the community from this guidance. Like I said, I don't think you need to take any action. I also need to remind that, of course, I think the person that would be primarily on the hook for this would be the city's financial officer, and I understand that the mayor here is, in fact, the city's financial officer. So you might need to have to get real familiar with these if the city were to adopt these and try to conduct its affairs in this matter. But like I said, I do recommend that you voluntarily try it out.
Sorry to interrupt you.
I'm so sorry.
And since I do have some experience, I formerly was a state agency budget analyst, so I could certainly give you the benefits of my experience at performance-based budget analysis, although I did it with a much larger agency than this city. And then I'll leave you with one gimme as far as the performance standards. In 2014 and 2015, and 2015 is only half over, so there could be more. There have been 16 Shore Acres police dispatch calls to the address of one council member. I'd be very curious to know what the cost the community has put in on these dispatch calls, what the police weren't able to do during these 16 dispatch calls, and what benefits the community at large has received from these 16 dispatch calls to the one council member's address. And as far as inclusion of one of the agendas would be 8.8 of items on the notice, I certainly think there could be some merit in this, but of course it would mean that each council member would need to put on the agenda items which they might wish to talk about. Certainly the mayor would have to also. And this, I think, would have some issues as far as the flexibility of conducting this public information aspect of the city council meetings. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Moore.
Patrick Stanton, 128 Shady Lawn. First, I'd like to thank Alderman Jennings for bringing up about the exotic animals, because there is an ordinance that says you can't have exotic animals, including fowls, which is chickens. And I had said before, I'd ask the council to consider either getting rid of this ordinance or amending it so that it makes some sense. Because as I understand, it is not enforceable as it is written. So hopefully tonight we can at least begin a discussion to either amend it or get rid of it. Also, I like the way it's written. The public comments used to be that you could talk about anything you wanted to, not just things on the agenda. And you could discuss things on the agenda. You could discuss things on the agenda. And we also, at the time it was brought up, we used to be able to discuss it at that time when it was brought up. And now I realize that our mayor kind of changed the rules a little bit. When he started, he said that he wanted to try this. Last week, you expounded on the fact that there was a change There was an amendment to something that was offered. So the people in the public didn't know this amendment was coming, so how could they comment on the amendment? Because they had to comment at the time of comments rather than at the time that it was offered. So I would like to, for the council to consider going back the old way. Now, I know it takes longer. Now, and tonight it's going to take a long time. But nevertheless, I think that the community needs to get involved. Now, another thing I'd like to speak on, and it's not on the agenda, it's in the administrative reports, is the First Monday Heavy Trash Program. Now, I have heard this ad nauseum about how much problems we have getting somebody to pick up heavy trash. So I say it's time for Plan B. I don't know what Plan B is, but it's time to do something else because what we're doing is not working. Now, we used to have containers down here, and everybody took care of their own trash, brought it and put it in the container. We had a couple times a year where people would bring all their heavy trash down, put it in a container. Also, we used to be able to put 4-foot sticks or limbs, and the trash people would pick it up with the trash. Maybe that's what we ought to consider doing, but what we're doing is not working. And our city looks like trash. And we come down, what do people do when they come in the city? They head for the water. First thing you do, you come down Bay Area Boulevard. Weeds are up high. Ditches are not cut. Trash is beside the... Hey, we need to get in gear and take care of these things. So I would like for y'all to consider Plan B, whatever that is, for the heavy trash pickup. I spoke to the gentleman that owns... I didn't speak. I wrote a letter in November to Mr. Soule, who owns the property over here that has given people so much trouble. And he didn't even respond. I told him I was interested in buying the property. Nothing. So I read in the paper where people are forced out of their homes because we put liens on their property and such. Why can't we do something to take care of these vacant lots and these houses? Now, we did get rid of one house there on North Country Club in Bio. But something needs to be done. I mean, it's been 6 years since it's time to do a few things. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. I'll get to you, ma'am, just to say.
Diane Victor, 3346 Miramar. And I know David has this, he put it on the agenda about the placement of no parking signs on Miramar Park along the waterfront. When we moved here, the no parking signs were where the benches were. When you drove down Forest or Meadow Lawn or any of those adjoining streets, there was a sign that said no parking, and it was right by the bench that they had there. The hurricane took care of all those, took care of the benches, took care of those. And so when we built our house and put our driveway in, there weren't any signs there. We had to build again after Ike. And then sometime afterwards, Public Works comes and they install new signs. Well, it turns out these signs are, in at least two places, are directly across from the driveway, and they're pretty close to the road. I mean, I'm sure that David has them within specification, maybe 2 feet off of the road. So I just want to read you this. This is my plea to council. Since the sign that was behind my driveway got run over, and Public Works came and took it out, this is just my plea to ask you to please don't put it back there. We encourage council to reconsider the placement of no parking signs on Miramar Park. These signs were installed by Public Works after the hurricane, and unlike the old signs, which were placed across from intersecting streets, the new signs were installed across from driveways and residents. As a result, anyone backing out of the driveway has to be very cautious about backing into the no parking signs. Since their installation, to our knowledge, two of the signs were damaged and have been removed, and no telling how many visiting guest vehicles have been damaged because of the location of these signs. We request, that's my husband and I, the council require the placement of the no parking signs in a neutral area across from intersecting streets with Miramar, or in some other location directly across, not directly across from our driveway. And I'm just asking you, please, because we've had to deal with this, and we're old and we've got old people visiting us, and we have to go out there in the night sometimes and stand by that sign so they can see to back out. And we're just asking, since the sign had to be pulled up, when you put it back, just don't put it behind our driveway, if we can do it. And I know David put this on the agenda, so you can talk about it. Thank you.
Ma'am, I'm sorry, I was backwards wondering. Mr. Doogie, can you?
No.
Okay.
My name is Margaret Moore, and 401 Oakdale. And there's a few things I want to address. And mainly agreeing with this gentleman here, that's the meat of my discussion. We want Shore Acres to be beautiful. If you drive by a home that's been managed here to the T, and the ditches are not mowed, that it really takes away from the beauty of the whole aspect. And I ride my bike around. Most people are willing, are mowing their ditches, are weed eating them. It's not an easy task, and they probably have to pay their mowers extra to do it, because it is a little bit more labor involved. I don't know who mows, how often we mow. I think it's the parks department that does mow. And they're supposed to mow both sides of the ditches, the one by the next to the house and then next to the road. And this isn't getting done. I see many ditches that have never, ever been mowed. And the vine that I have talked about, the pepper vine or whatever it is that I am so allergic to, and my husband is allergic to, proliferates on these streets, growing out into the street where you have to almost dodge them because it's growing out, and if you are trying to not be in the road, you'll get, you know, whacked by the weed. And this weed also is proliferating in Aaron Park. It's all over that park. I go there in the morning, and it's in the St. Augustine grass, and you can't even walk. And I don't know if it bothers anybody else the way it bothers me, but it really is hazardous. But mainly, I did want to bring up the fact that our ditches are not being mowed, and I see that we want a donation. Y'all are asking for donations for the Parks Department. It doesn't say what this money will be earmarked for. We're going to get people to donate money. We need to know where it's going to be used, how it's going to be used, and so forth, before we part with our money. And people are already donating their time, sweat, equipment, and gas. This is a big hunk of change already. If our ditches cannot be mowed appropriately, how about if we put it out there or have a contractor come do it, take bids, and see if they can take care of the business. The park director can go around and mark those ditches that are not being mowed and see that they get mowed, because like I said, many of our ditches are already being mowed, and thank you, we thank the citizens for that. That's all I have to say. Thank you very much, and thank you, David, for your nice letter.
Thank you, ma'am.
This is Ron Wood at 401 Oakdale. My comments are mainly toward David James. I walked the road on Westview with him on a Sunday a few weeks ago and went over the drainage problem with the pipes, and I just want to make sure that everybody understands that the pipes on Shady Lawn are actually higher than the pipes on Sorghum Boulevard. It's supposed to drain from here to there, and you can't make water go uphill. So those pipes need to be removed from Shady Lawn and set lower, set right. I don't have any idea what contractor could put a pipe that high and not know what he's doing. But, you know, I've been doing this stuff ever since I was that high. And I know what stuff don't run uphill, like the plumbers say, you know. Okay. Anyway, I thank David for coming down and looking at it, and I just want to make sure everybody understands that water does not run uphill. So thank you for taking care of my ditch. Has this much water right now. It's next to my driveway. It's right now. It hadn't rained in, you know, a couple of days. So what do you do? Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Okay. Anybody else?
Thanks.
Oh, I'm sorry. I have a see I'm sorry. Just come on.
My name is Kim Stanford, and I live at 211 Shorey First Boulevard. I'm here because we have a fishing tournament this weekend. Parking on Miramar, I wanted to see if we could get permission. I also need a permit, I guess, to use Miramar Park for other things besides parking, since there's going to be so many of us there. I'm not sure or not, but we wanted to be able to park on Miramar Park like we do 4th of July, just for this one day at some time of year. If y'all would consider that. Also, last city council meeting, I brought up Shell Beach. I had asked that it become primary use for members only. And in response to my request and the request of the other residents to make Shell Beach private or for members only, Mr. Jennings sent out a letter after the last meeting in response to our request made at the last city council meeting explaining that Shell Beach is a public beach and therefore cannot be made private. However, public beaches can be restricted to members if the membership is open to the public. If you've ever been to Galveston, you can pay, you get a little sticker, and you can visit the beaches all year long. I'm not even sure if Shell Beach is technically a beach. I'm waiting for a phone call to find out if that is technically a beach or if it's just a wash up of shells that we put a sign up and called Shell Beach. I think it was private at one time and it was under a lease. But I would also like a copy of the city's response to my request since I did not receive one. I don't know if I have to request that under the Public Information Act or not, since it was from a city council member in regards to my request at the last city council meeting. So it was directly addressing something that we brought to city council, but I didn't get a response to that, so I just wanted to find out if I could get a copy of that. That's it.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you!
Bless you.
Oh, can I say one more thing? Do I still have another minute?
Still time.
I'm sorry, it's in regards to the chickens. I don't think that... I know our code is not enforceable right now as it is, but they are poultry, they're fowl. Our code says that we're not allowed large fowl. Chicken is not a large fowl, and who is? I think that, you know, this request is as a result of one resident being upset with their dog barking at some chickens. I went by the house. The coop is awesome. The fence is nicer than the one I have around my house. There's six hens, no roosters, so there's no cockadoodle doing. I don't know who. I don't know who it's hurting, but if you guys are going to change the code, if you could just submit it to allow us to have 4 or 6 hens, maybe, you know, if they're well kept. You know, limit it to a certain area. I don't know, but you know, maybe keep their wings clipped or something, but I don't think that we should take chickens away altogether because I don't think we're going to help them as a community. I've never even seen a chicken in the neighborhood, so until this all came up. But, and I also want 4 more.
Thank you. Yes, ma'am. If you'll come up here and state your name and address, please.
Good evening. I'm Karen Harris, and I'd like to expand also on what Kim said. I want to stand in
your address.
I'm sorry. Oh, 215 Oakdale.
Thank you.
I stand in support and solidarity with chickens. A lot of communities, a lot of progressive communities are allowing chickens. And I don't know what, I know that there are various concerns. There's health concerns. There's, it can impact neighbors. And so I think that it would be prudent to form some well thought out ordinances on chickens, like the number of chickens that you can, the limit to a number of chickens, whether or not or to not allow roosters, and then to address the hygiene and upkeep so that we do have an enforceable ordinance with chickens and it doesn't get out of hand and we don't next have goats and peacocks and everything else. But I would just like to state that it's more of a nuisance to have people walk their dogs and not pick up after themselves and dump it in my yard and everything else. And I think chickens that are maintained and support a family, and so that's all I have to say on the matter. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Just wanted to expand on the
name and address.
David Harris, 215 Oakdale.
Thank you, sir.
I understand it to get monthly trash pickup would be like $7 a month, but I was wondering if we could look into maybe getting it quarterly or even every 6 months where they pick, actually the service comes around and picks it up at your house, for if it'd be a lower amount added everybody's bill, it'd be something people might accept if it was $3 or $4 or something. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
I want to see those chickens. 3342 Miramar, Charlotte Wells. Just want to let you know, just in case you haven't heard, that eggs right now are going up in price by a huge amount because the CAFO chicken farms are producing chickens that have, and I think they had to destroy the chickens actually, mm-hmm, in a lot of these places. So prices are going up. So just as an economic factor, it would be nice to be able to raise some chickens. And I agree with all the things Karen said and she said about the chickens. So I don't mind having them here. I love fresh eggs. They're a whole lot better than eggs in the store. So thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Wells. Any other comments from the audience? Okay.
I was going to say something. Oh, I'm sorry. I just want to make sure you weren't jumping around. Okay, go ahead.
No, please.
Oh, okay. I apologize real quick. Mike Masadiego, 615 Meadow Lawn. Apologize for coming in here like this. I've been working outdoors all day, and I got stuck in the cumulative traffic. But I just wanted to come by, and I picked the wrong day because now I'm last. I have to go. But I just want to thank y'all for addressing everything that I had last meeting. Everything was promptly done and everything. So just thank y'all very much. I know you'll hear all those. I just want to thank y'all. I can hear that. And as far as chickens go, man, I'll be first to tell y'all, I don't want to hear no, because I'll be lying to the first woman who wakes me up. We're like, wow, we are going to have a problem. I'll be the first to tell you, you ain't going to like a chicken, I promise you. I don't care about your eggs, I don't care, y'all do what you want. Yeah, tofu or something, I don't care, but I want to.
Let's keep us soon. Thank you, sir, we appreciate that.
Thank you.
Any other comments? Please, not on chickens.
And I do agree about that deal about this weekend walking down there with the kids and all that
profession. Moving on to item 7.0, administrative report. 7.1, city administrative report. 7.1.1, tropical storm bill preparation response and impact. Mr. Stahl.
Well, good evening. We had a tropical system pop up, as you know, off the Yucatan. And we went through all the same process as we would for any potential hurricane. Those of you that have been around for a while might recall that Alicia did the same trick, popping up in the Gulf, and was also expected just to come in and be not much of a tropical storm until it stopped and built strength and then came in. So we pay attention and we do the preparations for all the storms, make sure all the vehicles and the equipment are fueled and everything is in working order, the generators are checked, and all those precautions. That said, we were very fortunate that this storm didn't bring us any type of disaster. The winds were not particularly significant for us. The rainfall, we're in pretty good shape to handle rainfall. It's the tides that get us, or storm surge and a hurricane. This is the tide gauge for Morgan's Point. And you can see the blue line is where the normal predicted tide would be, and the red was the tide coming into the event, what became Tropical Storm Bill. Our response was largely in putting out barricades and keeping people from driving through high water on the streets that we have. Of course, East and West Bio always have water across them just with a strong south wind. But we also had Southbrook and Brookside and some other streets that were impacted. This is the stream gauge at Taylor Bio and Shoreacre Boulevard, and the red line is top of bank. We'll have water in the street about halfway up to that red line, and then as it approaches that red line, you come to the top of the bulkhead close to Shoreacre Boulevard. So we had exceptionally high water along Taylor Bio. This is on the east side, which is second flood, and this is almost all the way out to Shoreacre Boulevard. So that was a dangerous situation if anyone were to be navigating that. We also had the same situation along Forest, and we put barricades out to warn people off of that water. We have some minor ditch erosion as a result of the heavy rains, and the only damage that we sustained that we've identified to this point is one board on the kayak launch, which was well submerged, and it popped a board loose, which has already been replaced. You can see a light-colored board there. So we're real pleased that with all of the improvements we've made since Ike to all of our water and wastewater systems, with the level of water that we had and the storm, that we didn't suffer any other damage from that. So if that's our hurricane season, we can move to next year. I'd be happy. You ready to move on to the next?
Yeah, move on to 7.12, Attorney General letter, no public information.
In your packet is a copy of the letter the city has received through the city attorney on one of our recent open records requests, one that was discussed previously at council. And I wanted to bring that to your attention that is now closed. And the last sentence of the second page, first paragraph, is the finding of this letter ruling from the Attorney General's office. And it says, to protect the privacy of the individual to whom the information relates, the city must withhold the submitted information in its entirety under Section 552.101 of the Government Code in conjunction with common law privacy. What that says is that our city attorney was exactly correct. The items that were sent to the AG for this letter of opinion that the city attorney believed should not be released. The Attorney General has upheld that, and so that information will not be released. And there were no other violations on the city's part pertaining to that open records request. I'm ready for the next item, if you are.
All right, David, let's move to 7.13, first Monday, heavy trash pickup.
Heavy trash pickup. We talk about this every meeting. It's like paying the bills. I'm bringing this back to you because we're going to need to make some decisions as we move into the next budget year, so I wanted to get this on your agenda and tell you where we're at today. And I'll back up a little bit of the history that I know. I've only been here with Mr. Stanton for 10 years and 5 months, so I don't go back to when we had any containers. We never had containers since I've been here in 2005. But what we did do is we let people haul their own vegetative debris only, so limbs, branches, such, across the highway to the piece of property that the city had. And then twice a year we had NOVA come in and they would chip that. And that was marginally successful in that the city staffed it for the weekend. Twice a year we did the cleanup greenup. The problem that we had was a residual problem, and that was that we trained everyone that that's where you haul stuff to dump it.
And all year long between those two times, we had everything dumped over there, from concrete and building materials and vegetative materials. And it would cost us twice as much as the chipping twice a year to clean up and haul off to a landfill, landfill material that didn't belong there. And we didn't have any way of effectively preventing that. Prior to Ike, I suggested that we take the same funds and we contract with a tree service to drive through the city with a chipper and do curbside chipping. And so that vegetative debris was picked up, put right in the chipper, reduced right into chips, and was hauled out. And because it was already chipped, it reduced the number of truck hauls that it took to do that. And that was very cost effective. It was so cost effective that we went from twice a year to three times a year to doing it monthly. Then we had Ike. Ike changed the complexion of our debris. And we were encouraging people to clean up their lots with houses or without houses and get the debris out of there. And that wasn't just vegetative debris. It was anything that floated or washed up. And so we had a much broader spectrum of debris, and we were trying to help clean the city up. And so we broadened that, and we went to using a picker truck that could pick up heavier debris, more diverse debris, including building material, as long as it was put there by the resident and not a contractor. That presented some challenges in limiting that material, but that's where we started down this path. In your packet is the first Monday heavy pickup list of what we pick up. The things that we, in this plan, had planned to pick up were brush, limbs, shrubs, furniture, mattresses, carpet, water heaters, discarded clothing, fence pickets and posts, clothes dryers, dishwashers, Christmas trees, open and dry paint cans, not liquid paint, bicycles, and packing boxes. Those were the things that were intended to be picked up. What's not eligible for curbside collection were tires or batteries, anything with a gasoline engine, air conditioners, clothes washers, refrigerators, freezers, televisions, computer components, any liquids, propane, butane, tanks, high-pressure bottles, construction debris, concrete bricks, concrete blocks, sand, dirt, or other loose material. And I would suggest to you that about 15% of what's out there at curbside today is on this list. Now, we did expand it to pick up tires. We were able to find a vendor that would take the tires at no cost to us, and tires are difficult to get rid of, so we were thrilled to do that. We will pick up tires on any Tuesday. We do that with recycling, but not part of the heavy pickup, because they can't take it. Now, we budgeted, and we've raised the money. We increased the money when we went to the more diverse group, because it has to go to landfill. It can't go with chipping. We raised the budget slowly over time. We went from, we started at $7,000 a year, we're now at $24,000 in the current budget year. And as of today, on heavy pickup, which is, you can't call successful at this point, we have spent $23,482.40. So we have expended our entire year's budgeted amount for heavy pickup already. And we ain't done with the year yet. We have an alternative vendor who gave us a competitive price. We did locate some others that would pick up, but it was so outrageously expensive that it wasn't even feasible to look at. This vendor would come out with a trailer and on Sunday and start on it early and then use a picker truck where it needed to on Monday. The proposal that they have provided us comes out to $38,400 a year. And that allows for two pickup days a month, all year long, and each additional day that's required, if there's more material put out, a $1,600 bump to that. So we would need to budget somewhere north of $40,000 a year to get this material off. Now, Republic, they've let us down extremely consistently. They've not picked it up. So here are the range of options that I'm bringing out for you to start thinking about, and we'll make some decisions. And I will tell you that in our solid waste collection for household, we are under budget. We're doing well there. So it looks like I will have funds to work with between now and the end of this fiscal year to
to continue to pick up and to go to the new company at those rates. But I obviously can't tell them that they have anything beyond October 1st, because that's a new fiscal year. We reset the clock, and the money we have budgeted this year, $24,000, won't get it for next year. So the question is, do we reduce the number of times we pick up? Do we reduce the material that we pick up? Do we pick up? You know, we either have to come up with more money or less material and figure out, you know, where we get there. Now, it doesn't do any good to say we're going to pick up everything and we have the money, but can't get anybody to pick it up. So that's been our problem to this point. We do now have a vendor who says that they'll come get it, but it's going to be more money than what we've got. And I just wanted to bring this out and discuss these issues and let you know that I'm going to go ahead and pull the trigger, and we're going to spend money in the solid waste budget to finish out this year. But don't get your hopes up that we're going to be able to move into the next fiscal year doing the same thing, because there's going to be a cost associated with that. So, and if any of you individually have comments or suggestions, I welcome them, and I'd like to hear from you. That was the briefing I wanted to give you this evening.
Can you hear from us right now? Or later? I'm sorry. Is this thing you have to hear from us right now or later?
No, it won't be now.
Okay. We're going to move to 7.14,
Circle
Park Facilities
and Playground Equipment. Ready? All right. We have aging playground equipment. And we have had some, if not vandalism, some very hard use on the playground equipment, which has damaged it. It was brought to our attention that a barrel tube that was on this playground equipment that came off of this platform had broken to the point that you could push through it and create a pinch point and a hazard. We had put banding on it previously. But at the park, someone removed the banding, and that allowed it to break further to where now it was at a point where banding wasn't going to solve the problem. We've been patching and limping this playground equipment along for a long time. I had a grant, and we powder-coated the pieces and rebuilt it at one point and tried to save as much. We replaced a few parts on it. It's very expensive. It's now outdated to where parts are almost impossible to get. We removed the barrel. In this picture, you can see the barrel has been removed. It can't go back up. There were end pieces. In this picture on the right, you see a round circle to piece there. That one was previously damaged. It used to have a convex plexi in there where the kids could stick their head out and look down a little bit. And that failed, and we replaced it with a sheet of flat plexi. In this picture, it's been taken off because we went back to the same company in Beaumont that made that replacement for us, and we got two more so we can plug the ends where the tube was at. If the tube was available, the tube would cost us about $500 to $600, but it's an availability issue. So we're, again, rehabbing it to the extent that we can so that it can be safe. But it's shrinking, and it's going to continue to shrink, and the placement of playground equipment like we had originally, and like I say, it's been dissolving. You may remember a long time ago it had roofs on portions of it. Those failed and were removed, and so it's morphing and melting away. That's about $75,000 to $80,000 play area to replace that with what we had comparable. But there's progress being made. The parts are being fabricated. The plexi's already been made. We're now waiting on the hardware, all vandal-proof hardware, so that hardware's coming in. And also a chain off of the swing set. We use the PVC-coated chain, which prevents very small children from getting their fingers pinched in the chain. So we want to make sure that continues to be safe. Teenagers, however, like to wrap the swings all the way around, and that damages the PVC. So fortunately, only one set of that needs to be replaced. We had some issues that were raised about the restroom, and some of those I'm not quite sure what to do with. The hand dryers, for example, reported not to work, and every time we've gone, they've worked. I've gone myself, even the same day it was reported, and they're working. Perhaps the person who's doing that is flipping the diverter instead of putting their hand underneath to trigger the blower. But they were working every time we've gone. There is no hot water in our restroom, so when the sinks were plumbed, the hot and cold were both plumbed with the cold water. We have had some plungers that, again, from, I'll say, rough use, but more likely vandalism, have broken. As long as one works and you can get water, you know, we're not expending funds to repair those. They don't cause a safety hazard. It's just water out of one side and not both. We are attempting, again, to stock it with soap and toilet paper. Most of the toilet paper either disappears entirely or ends up stuffed in one of the toilets to overflow it. But we'll give another run at that and see if we can get materials in there. And that's all I had to report on the playground equipment.
Maybe let's move on to 7.15 voluntary park donation program.
The last utility bill included a three-part form that would allow you to zip off a piece and send in a donation with your utility bill. It needs to be a separate check. They go to different funds. They go to different checking accounts between the utility and the park. We have received 8 donations as of today. They total $360. One of those donations, and I count as one donation, was 3 checks with all 3 forms returned for each month. So they're paying ahead 2 more months. The purpose of the form is to give you a reminder, prompt you, and we'll send those quarterly. So every quarter you'll get a new form. You might notice the form has 3 months on each one staggered so that we don't have to have multiple forms. We just have one form that we can send out as a cost-saving measure. I'm pretty impressed that we brought in $360 so far, and we'll continue that program, and that will get some money for council to use. And I heard the comment this evening, didn't know what the money was designated for. The resolution that Councilman Bunker brought to council said that money would be held separately, would only be used for improvements to the parks, expenditures that are approved by city council. It does authorize the Parks and Recreation Advisory Board to make a recommendation to council on what to spend the money on so that council can have some assistance in picking and choosing. But that will come back to council. And I suppose at any time council wants to set a target project that the money is going to in advance and use that to help raise money, that could happen as well. But that will go to park improvements and park equipment. That's all I got there.
Thank you, David. Moving on to 7.16, call the circuit board.
More pictures. You may have seen all of this in your way. If you go down in the 100 block of Shoreacres Boulevard, it's in the eastbound lane under the 2 smaller cones with a bag of cold patch sitting on top of a sign. It's covering a hole. It's about an 8-inch diameter hole. That was reported to me by Councilman Wheeler. We went right down within a few minutes and put a light in that hole and discovered that there was a void of about 3 foot in diameter and about 3 foot deep. Being right in the center of the lane, it wasn't getting wheeled traffic, but if somebody were to move over for somebody walking there or a dog or a trash can, vehicle weight there could have caused that to fail in. It's an extraordinarily thick base of old shell and a lot of asphalt, so it probably would have had to be a truck at this point, but still an unsafe situation. We immediately got a hold of Harris County Precinct 2. If this is a county road, it's the only county road we have in Shoreacres, but Shoreacres Boulevard from, pardon? No, it's not. From 146, where it's TxDOT at West Country Club to the water, is Harris County. They came out right away and took a look. We have a sewer main in the center of the street, which would be about 5 feet this side in the picture of that hole. We called an underground locate and hoping there was another utility that might be there, and there was not. We could see a bottom of the hole, and so what I surmise is that the water in the ditch worked its way under the road and found our wastewater line. We have an 8-inch line in the middle of the street there. And so that being the case, dug out the 1965 drawings of when the sewer was installed, and we went out and we marked off where special cleanouts should be. They're about 6-inch metal caps. You see them on a lot of our streets in the middle of the street. Usually there's an asphalt depression around it. Unfortunately, over the years, when you have less than perfect paving going on, they pave over those. And in this particular case, it had been paved over many times. And so we have a special metal detector, like surveyors use. We mark the street. We go out there. The green X is where our best estimate of where the cleanout should be. And then using the metal detector, where the orange bucket sits, is where they found it to be. It's about a foot deep. So that's a lot of basin overlay put over our special cleanout. So we got that exposed today. We started using a contractor to jet the line so that we can TV it. What we'd like to do is see the condition of the line from inside before we start tearing up the street. That sinkhole, there's nothing that says that sinkhole is directly over where the where it's infiltrating into the sewer main. So the last thing you want to do is start tearing up a street and then chasing it and just having a bigger and bigger problem. So today, we went to the downhole manstream yesterday, Friday, to pump it out. I suspected it might be full of dirt and sand, and it was not. But today when they started to jet this line, there was so much dirt and sand in it that it filled the truck, and I had to bring a second truck back tomorrow. So I think we have found where that sinkhole is going. And when we TV it, we'll be able then to reconcile the measurement on that TVing to the surface, and we'll just dig one hole for the repair and one hole for repair of the sinkhole. So you'll see that work happening out there. It isn't going to happen real fast because we want to do it right and do it with some fiscal responsibility. That's all I got.
All right. Move on to item 7.17, City Landscape, Shorty's Boulevard Meeting in City Hall.
Periodically, I take a look at the trees in the city and their needs. This last year, you may have noticed that we removed a lot of trees from Circle Park. We had a couple of grants and some help from some volunteers to plant trees, and we're rotating through from what most consider to be trash trees, from tallows and such, to real trees. And we don't want any of those trees to crowd the new trees, and so there's a progression that goes on. But we also look at how they're impacting our utilities and our facilities, and one of which is the oak tree in front of City Hall here. This tree, again, had grown to the point where it was impacting this building. It was hitting the roof, and we don't want the tree to damage the building. And fortunately, it was done ahead of the storm, because a storm will take the tree and beat the sap out of your building. So if you see the tree now, you'll see we've lifted the canopy. We've removed it back from the building. The other thing we did is by lifting that is provide, again, clear access to see the marquee, because sometimes that tree gets big and droops and blocks the marquee. So that was a pretty significant. We also took care of one tree here in the City Hall Garden, and we did the crepe myrtles down the Schroeder's Boulevard median. And crepe myrtles are a really nice, unique plant in that you can manage them into shrubs, or you can manage them into trees. And we're going through the process of managing them into trees. And so they're lifted up and higher, which allows easier for mowing. But if you watched us doing it, you might have had some concerns. But I'm telling you, it's not a problem. And that we reduce the number of trunks on many of those so that they will turn into trees instead of shrubs. And so I hope when you drive down and you see that, it's a pleasant appearance to you. I think it's a move forward with the city's landscaping. I just wanted to mention those two things on the landscaping tonight.
Moving on to 7.2, monthly financial report.
In your packet, the financial report. I'll be brief on that this evening since there's not a lot swing in there. If you look at the general fund, you'll see that our revenues exceed our expenditures by $184,510. So that's solidly operating in the black so far this fiscal year. Then I'm going to jump forward to the fund balances, checking accounts. The general fund, at the end of May, the checking account had $314,209.77. And the utility fund had $40,072.06. So those are both good fund balances for those particular operations. Our text pool, which is where we keep our funds that are on hand, that are not in the checking account or in certificate of deposit. The end of May, the balance is $745,895.91. Of course, we have four certificates of deposit with a maturity value of $255,852. And our tax collection in May, we received $20,532.24, bringing our year-to-date tax collection to $857,831.18. Our sales tax has been a bit of a roller coaster ride this year with some of the adjustments that the comptroller made, where they took back some that was erroneously paid to us. But we seem to be back now on an even keel after some up months and down months. In May, our general sales tax was about $5,643.91, and that's within $2.89 of the same month last year. So I would say we've kind of flattened out there. We also collect a 0.25% for road maintenance, and so that brought in $1,410.98 in sales tax for road maintenance. And that is the financial report.
Mr. Stowe.
Yes.
Mr. Mayor.
Sorry.
Mr. Mayor.
Go ahead, Mr. James.
Thank you. Question for Mr. Stahl about the delinquent taxes. What is being done to collect those, if anything?
We have a law firm that aggressively pursues our delinquent taxes for us. That's something they specialize in. It's the same firm that also collects delinquent taxes for the city of LaPorte.
Do we have any current lawsuits going on?
That firm handles those, and they handle them without our direct involvement. So we find out when those are filed. The lead agency on all of the tax suits is the school district. So those properties that we have where the taxes are delinquent, the school district pulls the trigger on filing those suits and the foreclosures. And in the past, the school put all those properties into their name as the trustee. We're also an included, we have a financial stake in that, so we are also listed as one of the owners of that asset. But when we started going to the school district about maintenance of properties that they had done a tax foreclosure on, weren't being maintained, they changed that policy, and now as they file those tax liens and become effective owners of the property, they put them in our name. So, and I don't find out until that occurs.
Interesting. Thank you.